I mean, sometimes I just look at a guy and I know this fellow's not gonna make it.
Our next guest is a combat veteran, a Marine Corps veteran, and a very impressive man overall. And he's someone who's become kind of a face of the military, because even if you don't recognize his name, if I name some of the film and TV projects he's been involved in, you will recognize those. And if you think about it, you'll probably know who he was in them. I'm talking about movies like Platoon.
Somebody once wrote, "Hell is the impossibility of reason." That's what this place feels like, hell.
Saving Private Ryan.
That's not all. There's a fourth brother, the youngest. He's somewhere in Normandy. We don't know where.
That boy's alive. We're gonna send somebody to find him.
TV shows like Band of Brothers, and that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Dale Dye. Captain Dale Dye of the United States Marine Corps, to be precise. Captain, how are you doing this morning?
I'm fine, Eric. Thanks very much for giving me the shot. Early reveille doesn't bother Marines. We're in good shape.
There you go. In the Navy and Marine Corps family, you and I both know getting up early, that's not a problem. That's just what you got to do some days. So when we talk about the fact...
Yeah, thrice up and give the ship a clean and sweep down.
There you go. Sweep down all decks, ladders, ladder backs, and passageways. Captain Dye, of course, you served, as I mentioned, in the Marine Corps in Vietnam. So tell us just a little bit about your service. Where did you join out of? Where are you originally from, and what did you do in the Corps?
Well, I'm originally from Southeast Missouri. You can probably tell by the way I pronounce the name of that state that I'm a little south of the area. But I enlisted in January of 1964 out of St. Louis, Missouri, and went to boot camp, trained as an infantryman originally, and then changed my MOS, became what the Marine Corps calls a combat correspondent, primarily based on the fact that I had graduated from military schools and edited a high school newspaper and that sort of thing. And I wanted to be in a position where I could see more than just the back of the other guy's pack. And being a combat correspondent allowed me to do that. It allowed me to do anything that I really wanted to in the Marine Corps, as long as I could produce a little story and a little picture about it. In 1967, they sent me to Vietnam, the 1st Marine Division, and I found out why the Marine Corps calls it combat correspondent, with the emphasis on the first word. We were essentially glorified riflemen who went along with the battalions and ran to the sound of the guns and observed what went on and took part whenever we could. So I did that. I survived quite a number of major combat operations. I fought in Hue in Tet of 1968. I was wounded a couple of times. I survived multiple tours and came home and decided that I would stay with the Marine Corps. I really appreciated what I had seen in combat, and I appreciated the little guy with a rusty rifle in the rear rank who really makes up the heart and soul of our American military. And I came to a great appreciation of that. I decided I wanted to stay around it. So I reenlisted, stayed for about 13 years as an enlisted man, rose to be a senior NCO, then was chosen to become an officer, became a warrant officer, converted my commission from warrant directly to first lieutenant, and was a captain by the time I got my second shot at getting shot at, and that was in Beirut, Lebanon, 82-83. Finally retired in 1984, and that's way too much information, Eric, but there you have it.
Well, a long and, as you said, decorated career, the Bronze Star with V among your awards, multiple Purple Hearts earned over in Vietnam. Now, you leave the military in 1984. It's been a part of your life for 20-plus years. What was that transition period for you like? I mean, a lot of people think of Marines as fearless, but did you have any fear and trepidation as you went to move from being on active duty to being a veteran?
I have fear and trepidation with every breath I take, but the truth of the matter is, in those days, Eric, we didn't have a lot of the transition training and sort of babysitting that and I don't mean that in a derogatory fashion, but the concern that for transitioning Marines, sailors, airmen, soldiers, Coast Guardsmen, that there is today. It was kind of thank you for your service. There's the door. Don't let it hit you in the butt on the way out. And good luck. Here's how you apply for the GI Bill. There wasn't a lot of that concern. So you kind of stood out there naked and afraid and wondered, you know, what the hell am I going to do here? And in my case, that was essentially true. I mean, I got to thinking, you know, what can I really bring to the table here? I'd been shot too many times to want to be a cop on America's mean streets, and I knew that, you know, if I got into defense contracting or ended up in some corporate cubicle, that, you know, I'd be a suicide in about 6 months. So I needed to do something, and I got to doing a bunch of introspection, and I said, you know, what's the common denominator here? What do I have? And I found out that I was always a movie buff all my life, Eric. I mean, I guess it's natural, but I had seen every military movie there was, I thought. And the common denominator there was that the majority of them upset me. I mean, they just didn't represent who we were, who I knew we were, right, from my own personal experience. And every veteran knows that. I mean, you go see a military movie, and the first thing you see is some stupid error, some stupid activity that would never happen. And you say, ah, crap. And you walk out. And I'd had that experience so many times. And I got to researching it, and I looked around, and I would see a credit at the end of a film, and it would say technical advisor, and it would be, you know, Major Umpty Frats, United States Army retired. And I said, well, how the hell can they make all these mistakes?
Right.
I don't get it. So when you're ignorant, you can do a lot of things that people tell you can't do. With that in mind, I came out to L.A. and began to research this. And the light began to glow. I found out that there was a great deal of hubris. And I use that term advisedly in Hollywood, especially among auteur filmmakers who sincerely felt that anybody who spent any time in uniform could not conceivably have a creative bone in his or her body.
Right.
Because if they did, why the hell would they go and be a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine? And that attitude really was prevalent. And so they would hire somebody just for the sake of finding out which side the ribbons go on. and that would be the extent of it. I began to realize, okay, here's what's wrong. These folks have no idea who we really are, how we really talk, how we really walk, how we relate to each other, what the concept of relying on the guy to your right and your left to survive in combat is about. And so it's natural that they miss it when they're doing these films, so that they dream up some fantastic circumstance and put the poor military in it. And that upset me. I said, well, you know, this is easy to fix. I'm an old Marine. I know how to train people. I can do this. Just give me your actors. I'll show them the truth. I'll demonstrate it for them and make them live in it, and they'll get it. Because they're actors. I mean, they're dry sponges. They understand about emotions. They understand about psychology, things like that. So that was my premise. Give me your actors and let me unscrew this mess. And then whatever they do for you on screen is going to be the right stuff. Look, you can teach a chimpanzee how to carry a rifle and wear the right equipment. and you can make corrections like, you know, not carrying M16 rifles in a World War II picture. You can do that sort of thing. And frankly, that's what most technical advisors had done before I became on this, before I came on the scene, because that's all they were allowed to do. That's as close to the project as they were allowed to get. That wasn't my way of doing things. It wasn't the military way of doing things, and I knew better because I'd trained men all of my life, so I knew what could be done. But selling that to Hollywood was a difficult proposition, my friend.
Yeah.
I ran up against every brick wall you could find. They would look at me and they'd say, look, we've made military movies for decades, and we've made zillions of dollars. Mm. Why do we need you and your stupid, you know, Stanislavski full immersion methods? Why do we need that?
Right.
You know, why should we spend money on that? So here's the door, and don't let it pinch you on the way out. So it was really very difficult. I kept at it, but I was about to give up because Hollywood is such a closed shop. So hard a nut to crack. And then I had learned to read the trade papers, Daily Variety and Hollywood Reporter and papers like that that cover showbiz. And I saw this little announcement in one of those papers that said a heretofore relatively unknown writer-director by the name of Oliver Stone was going to do a movie based on his own experience as a combat infantryman in Vietnam. And I knew at that moment that this guy, whoever the hell he was, this guy would really understand why I wanted to do things differently. And through a series of machinations that I really can't tell you about because the statute of limitations probably hasn't run out, I was able to get a hold of Oliver Stone, and I did my best 2-minute pitch, and I ran it down for him why I thought so many war movies were screwed up and how we could fix them. And he got it right away. He said, "Oh yeah, you know, that's right. That's what we need. These guys need to understand who we were and what we were when we were 19 in those jungles." And I said, "Right." So he trusted me. We're at opposite ends of the political spectrum, but that didn't mean anything because we were both common combat veterans,
right.
And we knew what the deal was. So he gave me 33 actors and 3 weeks. And these were actors who, in those days, the name didn't mean anything, but they certainly do today. Forrest Whitaker, Johnny Depp, Charlie Sheen, Tom Berenger, Willem Dafoe. And I took them into the mountains of the Philippines, into the Philippine jungles. And for 3 weeks, they were totally isolated and they lived as combat soldiers did in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam. And I mean, that was all there was. They dug a hole and they lived in it. They slept in it. And I trained them every day. They got about 2 hours sleep a day. They only ate twice a day, or once if they pissed me off. And essentially, when I brought them down out of those mountains, they were who Oliver Stone and I were when we were 19 and 20 in Vietnam. And so we put that little film together, a little $5 million film, and brought it home. I was there with Oliver coaching and getting the best performance, the correct performance out of the actors all the way through. We brought that little film home. It was titled Platoon.
The first real casualty of war is innocence. The first real movie about the war in Vietnam is Platoon.
We immediately blew everything off the stage. We won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director for Oliver Stone. And he was very kind to recognize my contributions to the film during the Academy Awards. And so at that point, all of my theories, which had seemed so wild to Hollywood before that, now became de rigueur. Everybody wanted me to work on their films. And that was the beginning of Warriors Incorporated, which is my company. We went on to do many, many terrific films. I think about 50, 51 of them so far to date. I got to work with some really great directors, Roberto Benigni, Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, and on and on and on. Bob Zemeckis. And they really taught me filmmaking. They taught me the technical aspects of it. And thank God they did. I expanded the company because films, military films, only get made every once in a while. They aren't churned out every two or three every year. So my company, in order to stay in business and keep some people gainfully employed, I sort of expanded our repertoire. And we got into themed entertainment for theme parks that had rides and that sort of thing that had a military aspect. For instance, we did Star Trek: The Adventure for Hilton Hotels in Hollywood, in which we went and trained all of their performers how to be Starfleet officers. We got into music videos. We did Rooster for Alice in Chains. We did When September Comes for Green Day. We got into video games, and we advised on the entire series of the Medal of Honor series for Electronic Arts. And then I started a publishing company called Warriors Publishing Group that published not only my books. I think I've got about 12 novels published now, but other authors, other military veterans who were authors and wanted their stories to be told and were good enough to produce a novel. We do that sort of thing. So without really meaning to, and believe me, I didn't mean to, we've sort of become a mainstay in Hollywood. And once again, that's more information than you wanted, but there it is.
Well, we are talking to one of a person who I consider a mainstay in Hollywood. He is retired Marine Corps Captain Dale Dye, who you may remember from such small films as Platoon, Saving Private Ryan, JFK, another one that you did along with Oliver Stone, and being involved in particular, one of my favorite things that's ever been put on film, Band of Brothers, where you played Colonel Sink. We're also a military advisor. I remember getting it on DVD and seeing the behind the scenes, and they did a feature on the boot camp, essentially, that you put all the actors from Band of Brothers through, and they spoke about you in reverential tones. So I wanted to ask you about your experience with the Hollywood actors and the fact that there's also just not a lot of veterans out there in Hollywood. We do have some. One of your fellow Marines, of course, is Adam Driver, who plays Kylo Ren in the new Star Wars series. He was a Marine. R. Lee Ermey is still doing his thing out there. But would you like to see more veterans out there in Hollywood, not only behind the camera, but in front of it as well?
Yeah, absolutely, I would, Eric. You know, I think, listen, the current veteran talent pool is really deep. But it's underutilized. I can't tell you how many hundreds of phone calls, emails, letters I get regularly, every month, from young men and women who are just out of the service, and they want to be, some of them want to be the next Captain Dye, and I get that, and that's fine. But they want to be actors or writers or film technicians of some sort, and they have no idea how to get involved. And frankly, there is no good answer that I can give them, because the film community, the motion picture community, and there's only two big clumps of it, one big clump in New York and one big clump in L.A., and it's really a tight-run ship. It's often a closed shop. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It has to do with hubris. It has to do with the fact that there is a pot full of money involved.
Right.
And the more people you allow to suck out of that pot full of money, the less money there is for you. And it's, you know, there's a lot of underappreciation for young men and women who want to get into this business. And frankly, those who try are sometimes very often exploited.
Right.
So that they can't make a living and they can't break into this, and it causes enormous frustration. And that frustration often leads to misbehavior,
right?
To bad patterns of lifestyle, and so I'm enormously disappointed in that, and I'm, you know, every chance I get, like this one, I climb up on a soapbox and piss and moan about it, and I urge, you know, that it's one thing to say thank you for your service. And we appreciate it, and we love you guys and gals, and so on and so forth. That's all fine,
right?
But that's chin music. That's lip service.
Yeah, it absolutely
is. If you really appreciate what these men and women have done for you, for our nation, for the freedoms that they've helped buy for you, for the security that they've helped buy for you, then give them a shot.
You're speaking of Hollywood, and there is a new way of doing things, and that is crowdfunding. And I understand that you're actually working on crowdfunding a project right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, Eric, and thanks for the opportunity. It's a film that I've written, and as I said, I've learned to be a filmmaker at the elbow of the absolute best, and they've been kind enough to teach me the state of the art. And so I wrote a film called No Better Place to Die. It's a World War II feature in which talks about the seizure and defense of a bridge and a causeway in Normandy.
Right.
That literally saved D-Day. Had that bridge not been taken, the Germans would have blown right through and possibly pushed all of our landing forces right off of Omaha and Utah Beach. And so this little band of paratroopers misdropped all over the peninsula, got together, took a bridge at Lafayette and that the long causeway that went on the other end of the bridge, and they defended it. And that's a wonderful story. That's a microcosm of all the heroic things that went on in World War II. When the big plans swirled down into the crapper, the little guys, the sergeants, the lieutenants, the PFCs, they get together and they know the commander's intent and they get it done. So I want to tell that story. And I want to direct it because I wrote it and because I understand it.
Right.
But Hollywood objects to that because, you know, I'm not a known auteur.
Yeah.
And so I decided, you know, the hell with it. I'll do it myself. And so we began on Indiegogo to ask fans and veterans and people who understand what we're doing to give us a hand on a film called No Better Place to Die. Right there on Facebook, look up No Better Place to Die. That'll take you directly to the Indiegogo site. And thanks for the opportunity to pump that.
Making the journey from the jungles of Vietnam to the jungle that is Hollywood. Dale Dye has done it his way. For Vet Story and ConnectingVets.com, I'm Eric Dane.